America's number one show on pop culture and politics. This is the Michael Medved Show.
And another great day in this greatest nation on God's green earth. A great day despite the fact that a great athletic hero and achiever and a pretty bright and decent guy named Richard Sherman has been charged with five misdemeanors, including a DUI and resisting arrest. He was resisting arrest with a police dog. We'll bring you back to the very latest in the Richard Sherman case, which is unbelievable when you think about it. But first up, we're going to talk about another kind of indulgence. Richard Sherman has apparently done tremendous damage to his life and to his family's life by overindulgence in alcohol. And there's some people who have some challenges with marijuana. One of them is Senator Chuck Schumer. I'm not talking about his personal behavior. I'm talking about a legislative proposal yesterday. And the best perspective I've read on this, not surprisingly, is from Kevin Williamson, who's become a friend of this show. And Kevin Williamson is somebody who has played a key role in National Review. He is one of the most entertaining and insightful writers around. He is also the author of Big White Ghetto, Dead Broke, Stone Cold Stupid, and High on Rage in the dark, pardon me, dank, woolly wilds of the real America. Well, Kevin, I'm glad to give you a break from the dank, woolly wilds to speak to Seattle and the rest of the country. Appreciate it, and appreciate your take on marijuana reform.
Oh, my pleasure.
Yeah, okay. First of all, explain what Senator Schumer got wrong yesterday, because you're not opposed to some form of decriminalization of marijuana. What is Senator Schumer got wrong?
Well, the bill would essentially deschedule marijuana, which is, I think, the right thing to do. So it would take away federal criminal penalties related to that. But, of course, we can't just do that. We have to add a whole bunch of stuff to it. And Schumer's bill would do a lot of the things. It would establish, you know, a new regulatory regime, a tax regime. It would notionally earmark those tax dollars for programs for communities that have been disproportionately affected by the war on drugs, which is a very fancy way of saying for Democratic client programs and full employment programs for Democratic workers of various kinds. And it would also nullify all of the federal marijuana arrests that were nonviolent, in the words of the proposal. And that, I think, is probably okay, but we should be pretty clear about what that means, because most of the people who get arrested and convicted of marijuana possession get arrested, 98% of them at the state level. Most of the people who are being charged with federal crimes are people who are parts of large drug syndicates. And even if the particular crime they're being convicted of is not a crime of violence, there's no such thing as a nonviolent transnational drug cartel. There just isn't. So if we're going to do that, we should be clear-headed about what it is we're doing, even if we think it's the right policy.
Well, isn't it true that this line that you've heard over and over and over again, that there are millions and millions of people who are rotting in jail simply because they used marijuana? Most people who actually go to jail for marijuana, and as you said, especially so for federal prisons and for federal crimes, but most people who go to jail for marijuana, at least part of the charges against them, which may be plea bargained down, but part of those charges against them are selling, are dealing. They are not just somebody who's growing his own marijuana plant and getting high at home.
Yeah, that'll depend really very strongly on when the conviction happened. There are a lot of people who've been convicted on relatively simple possession charges, who've gotten very long sentences that they're still serving, who probably wouldn't even be charged if they were arrested now, because just as a matter of prosecutorial discretion and police discretion, we tend, even in places where possession of marijuana is illegal, not to really prosecute people very much for small amounts. But there are a lot of people who have been convicted of that crime in the past, many of whom are still still incarcerated for it. So I think that's probably worth keeping in mind. Like any other crime, you know, you often get people who are guilty of or suspected of or involved in a bundle of crimes. And sometimes marijuana is the easiest thing to convict someone on because there's, you know, physical evidence, possession, and all that stuff. It's relatively easy to convict them on a possession charge versus other kinds of charges that you have to prove, intent and conspiracy and other sorts of things. So, yeah, there are people who get convicted of possession because prosecutors found it easier to do that than convict them of something else. But I don't think that's really a very strong argument against getting rid of those convictions, to be honest. You know, if that's what prosecutors convicted you on, that's what they convicted you on. If they couldn't get you on something else, well, that's how the game works, you know, and I'm okay with that.
Okay, what I assume you're not okay with, and maybe you can address this, is that having read your book, Big White Ghetto, I mean, one of the things that's consistent in a lot of the stories you tell is there are people who are substance abusers, including substance abusers to marijuana. Marijuana can be addictive. It is a fiction that it's not addictive. It does real damage to people. You point out in your piece that alcohol does even more. What happens with the impact of, even if we pursue the reforms that you recommend here, don't you think it represents an encouragement of more marijuana use and more marijuana in our society rather than less?
Well, I think that we've got some pretty good evidence to go on that because we've had legal marijuana in Colorado, for instance, for a long time now. We have seen more marijuana use among adults in Colorado now that it's legal. Not a huge number, not a huge increase, but an increase. Overseas, you know, in the Netherlands, we've seen you've seen increases in drug use where drugs have been legalized. So I think, again, we always need to be pretty clear-eyed about our policies and not tell ourselves these utopian stories that if we just do this one thing, then this problem will be taken care of. It won't. I mean, the problem with the war on drugs is that using prison and prosecution as a way to deal with drug abuse and drug addiction just isn't a very good way to do it. And it's more of a demand-side problem than it is a supply-side program. Well, it's different for different drugs, I think. And
take marijuana. And let's say you and I agree, and I think we do, that a heavy use of marijuana, and here in the state of Washington, the evidence is not, you don't even need to go to the university to find the evidence, but it's there. You can see it all around you. Marijuana has become more common, more accepted, more used. And there are more traffic accidents involving it, et cetera, et cetera. So, okay, given that, how do you keep it under control or maybe even push back against it so there are less people who suffer some of the real impact, negative impact of heavy pot use?
Yeah, I think that it's a social problem that is more like, say, out-of-wedlock childbirth than it is something that can be easily policed through criminal measures. It's about how families operate, about how communities operate, what our expectations of individuals are. And marijuana is kind of an odd drug because you're right that some people do develop serious problems with it. It's a pretty small number of marijuana users ever really develop a real problem with it. Even people who are at the moment pretty intoxicated with marijuana are generally less dangerous to themselves and other people than are people who are comparably compromised by alcohol. So it is one of those drugs where the most intensive problems affect a very, very small number of users, as opposed to something
Can you hang on for a few minutes, Kevin?
Sure.
Because I want to continue the conversation. Everybody's been talking about it a lot, including Chuck Schumer. We'll talk about what's worst about his proposal coming up on the MedVet Show.
You can't handle
the Michael MedVet Show.
Hello, I'm Mike.
Michael Medved show. Joined for a few minutes more with Kevin Williamson, who is a fellow at the National Review Institute. He is the roving correspondent for the National Review and the author of the very moving, funny, and insightful book, which I heartily recommend. It's available in paperback. It's called Big White Ghetto: Dead Broke, Stone Cold Stupid, and High on Rage in the Dank Woolly Wilds of the, quote, Real America. It's posted his book up at michaelmedved.com. Kevin, I was struck by the closeness, the proximity between an analogy that you were making. Sounded very good and sounded very smart, which was the analogy of, well, marijuana's a problem like out-of-wedlock birth because, no, it's not a good thing for society, and, yes, it leads to all kinds of difficulties, but there's really not much you can do about it. But you surely wouldn't dispense...
Well, if I could interrupt for just one second.
Sure.
I wouldn't say there's not much you can do about it. I would say there's not much the police can do about it.
Okay, great. Well said. But the police and the prosecutors and maybe the government, period?
Yeah, I mean, government policy in terms of, you know, establishing kind of norms and expectations, I think maybe, you know, plays a role there somewhere. But I think it's more of a following indicator than a leading indicator. I mean, think about drug use, a couple of things about it. One is that whether it's marijuana or cocaine or even heroin or things like that, most people who use a drug, including illegal drugs, never develop a serious problem with it. The overwhelming majority of people who use any of these drugs, including, you know, the scary ones that we talk about, heroin and stuff, never
fentanyl, as it's, this is my basic point. We just this week had it confirmed by the CDC that there were 93,000 people in 2020, 93,000 who died of drug overdoses, which is about double what the total number of deaths has been in the last couple of years. Yeah. And you're talking about more people who die of drug overdoses and traffic accidents, of far more, five times the number who've died of homicides. You're talking about three or four times the time number who've died of suicides. It's a tremendous death toll. So the question is, and I know that fentanyl isn't the same as marijuana, but there have been all kinds of studies that do indicate that people who use one drug, even a relatively so-called innocent drug like marijuana, it leads to a greater dependence. Do you think it's right to talk about drug addiction overdoses being a crisis?
Yeah, certainly. But I think it's a public health crisis, not a criminal justice crisis. The other thing that I think about this is that I don't know how many addicts you know. I, for whatever reason, have known quite a few over the years. And my experience, for the most part, is that for people who have serious drug problems, the drugs aren't really the problem. This is a problem that comes along with a basket of other pathologies that exist in people's lives, whether it's other kinds of mental health problems, inability to sustain a normal family and social life and a job and that sort of thing.
I know more than one person, but coincidentally, yeah, Someone I was talking about last night, someone close to us, where alcohol is the problem. And alcohol has taken a perfectly or reasonably well rearranged, achieving life and just smashed it, just destroyed it.
Yeah, which it can do. But more often it's the case that you see these sorts of problems, particularly with illegal drugs, among people who have all sorts of other problems on top of it. It's pretty rare to get the kind of reefer madness story of, you know, normal, well-adjusted married guy walking down the street, and then suddenly decides to try this drug, and suddenly he's, you know, a homeless person panhandling at an intersection 6 months later. I'm sure that does happen. I'm sure you can find cases of it.
But most of those
really
people who are most of those people who are panhandling and are living under freeway underpasses for 20 years smoke weed.
I don't know if that's necessarily the case, to be honest. I think most of them have serious mental health problems which for people in cities tend to intersect with drug abuse problems.
If the statistics show, if you can talk about both weed and alcohol, the majority of homeless people use either weed or alcohol or both.
Yeah, if you throw the alcohol in there, I think that's probably the case. It seems likely.
Yeah.
But that's like saying, you know, Switzerland and China have more than a billion people between the two of them.
Well, no, because alcohol abuse, of course, can lead to devastating consequences.
Sure. And,
okay, so I guess what I'm looking for here, by the way, you seem to suggest that the worst and best thing about the Trump proposal is it'll never happen. He'll sure. never get it passed.
Yeah, it's unlikely. I think it's going to pass. Republicans are opposed to it mostly because it comes from Schumer, and there are a number of Democrats who are opposed to it also, either because they're kind of Joe Biden types who take a more old-fashioned view of the war on drug stuff, or because they think it'll cost them politically. I think it's a mistake to let it die. I think it's a mistake for Republicans, too. This is one of those issues where you've got a very large majority of people on the same side of the issue, which for a change happened to be on the right side of the issue. It's a way to advance the ball on criminal justice reform in a way that I think makes sense in light of conservative principles that Republicans purport to believe in. And I also think that it's just a more sensible thing to treat these mental health problems and social problems as mental health problems and social problems rather than treating them as criminal justice problems. Because again, if you look at the whole universe of people who are using drugs, people who have serious problems with them are, you know, 1-3%. And taking a, you know, felony, lock them up, put them in prison approach to 100% of the people who use these drugs in order to look after the health care needs of 1-3% of the people who use these drugs, I think is just a really ineffective and backward way to go about doing it.
Okay. I think that is very well understood in terms by many people. But in terms of what comes next with any of this, you also write in your piece about this being an opportunity to demonstrate how federalism should work, because what we're sure. talking about here is getting the federal government out of disinvolved and preventing everything. For instance, how you vote. States should determine how they have voting standards and how they have voting operations. And, of course, the Democrats want to make everything absolutely a federal matter. Kevin Williamson, always provocative to speak to you, and I appreciate your taking the time. When we come back, speaking of substance abuse, we will give you the very latest on Seattle's own Richard Sherman. I know he's not from here, but played 7 years for the Seahawks. It's enough. We will get to that, and we will also get to a living demonstration from the Michael Medved Show of the impact of marijuana. That and more coming up on the Medved Show.
Entertain your brain.
Your show is very entertaining.
Every day on the Michael Medved Show. The Michael Medved Show.
And on the Michael Medved Show, one of the things that we've been talking about a great deal this week has been the use of drugs, particularly marijuana. Now legal, by the way, in one form or another, in 45 of the 50 states. Now, 18 states, it's fully legal recreational marijuana. The others have some form of medical marijuana as a pain reliever. And by the way, the medical marijuana popularity and effectiveness, who knows? But popularity, it's been staggering. And now, speaking of staggering, we have a call of the week classic.
The call of the week.
I get so overwhelmed. Like,
I don't understand.
It's educational.
Like, everyone goes to the bathroom on campus every day, unless they have some great powers.
It's informative.
Your talk show creates a hostile environment.
Feel the love.
I love Fidel Castro. Fidel Castro, please keep it up.
Hear the hate.
And you're the devil. You're the big Hitler.
Every Friday, exclusively on The Michael Medved Show.
And the winner is a collage of callers who called up back from July of 2010. So we're talking about 11 years ago. And they called up to talk about, well, the way that marijuana had especially enriched their lives. Listen.
Hello, everybody.
Hey.
Good afternoon. How are you?
Very well, Jay. Are you a marijuana enthusiast?
I am a longtime marijuana smoker. I don't smoke every day, but I do smoke with some regularity.
It makes you stupid. No denying, no doubt.
First, I would like to refute your claim that all marijuana enthusiasts are stupid. I'm a regular marijuana user. I do not believe that it affects my intelligence.
How long have you been using?
Regularly for 3 years.
Okay, just wait.
Hi, how are you doing today, Michael?
Very well.
So, I was disagreeing with Tuesday, right? I was
calling it Thursday, but that's okay. Let's agree that it's Thursday.
No, I support the legalization of it for a couple different reasons. And then the other aspect that it's a plant that's naturally grown. People that are users.
I forgot to say the last time I was on the radio, thanks for visiting Sheridan.
Oh, yeah, well, I love Sheridan. I love visiting Sheridan.
Yeah, Seattle, too. I've been out there a couple times. I think people ought to do whatever they want to their own bodies. I believe in what Ronald Reagan said. Do you remember what he said?
Hey, Michael.
Hey.
I think you're wrong on the legalization of drugs for several reasons.
Go.
Yep. You're wrong on the legalization drug.
I know you said that. You're having a flashback.
I use the gateway drug water, and now I'm hooked on root beer. Uh-huh. And it's running into a lot of
And that's
money.
The only drug you use is root beer?
Yeah. Anyway, I think free that. People ought to be able to do what they want to themselves.
I was going to clean my room until I got high. I was going to get up and find the broom, but then I got high.
It's nostalgic, those good old days before pot was officially legal in the state of Washington. One of the things that is great about our new MedHead Plus service is you have access to, I think it's 15 years of calls of the week. And it's a great opportunity. Some of those calls of the week are classic. And actually, I think we have several montages of pot users. And so help me, it's not set up. This is not staged. This is real. This is a cross-section of vital life. And again, as people indicate the long-term impact of marijuana use, by calling in and contributing to our Call of the Week shows. Check it out. You can find that as a MedHead Plus user. Go to michaelmedved.com. Okay, speaking about another addiction abuse story, I don't know if it's fair to call it addiction, but apparently reports are, and they're fairly accurate, that there were two bottles of hard liquor that were consumed by the great cornerback, Richard Sherman. And yes, that's cornerback. And the story from Seattle Times, the latest after his appearance in court today, former Seattle Seahawk Richard Sherman has been charged with 5 misdemeanors, including driving under the influence, endangering roadway workers. That was because he smashed into an area where work was going on. Resisting arrest and domestic violence-related counts of malicious mischief and criminal trespass. The King County prosecutor filed the charges this morning. Sherman, 33, of Maple Valley, a former Seahawks standout cornerback and an NFL free agent, was arrested Wednesday after reportedly attempting to force entry into his in-law's Redmond residence. A judge ordered him released yesterday. According to probable cause statements released yesterday, Sherman fought with police officers who used a police dog to get Sherman into custody. That must have been, I would guess, fairly unpleasant. The Washington State Patrol said Sherman was under investigation for driving while intoxicated, crashing into a barrier on Highway 520, and leaving the scene. His badly damaged car, it was a Mercedes sedan, was found abandoned in a parking lot, says a probable cause statement authored by a state patrol sergeant. Sherman was charged with criminal trespass in the second degree with a domestic violence element, reckless endangerment of roadway crews, driving under the influence, resisting arrest, and malicious mischief with a domestic violence element. The DUI, driving under the influence, and reckless endangerment charges are gross misdemeanors. They're punishable by up to 364 days in jail. And so you get off one day short of a year, free of a year, and a $5,000 fine. He probably will not get that heavy a penalty. The other charges are simple misdemeanors which carry a maximum possible 90-day jail term, said prosecutor's office. Look, you wish him good luck. I'm not sure how well his free agency is going to do. And speaking of basically the impact of addiction, the Democrats who ran away, sounds a good title. The Democrats who ran away for Washington, D.C., did get drunk. And they got drunk on something more than Miller Lite beer that they had cases of when they got onto their private plane. There's actually something else they got drunk on, which is public attention. And it looks like Andy Warhol, of course, famously said, everybody gets only 15 minutes of fame. I think their 15 minutes are just about up. But wait till you hear what a Texas Democrat named Richard Raymond compared himself to. We will get to that. We'll also get to a couple of movies that are both very interesting and have very strong religious elements. They are both going to be reviewed coming up on the Michael Medved Show. One is called Scenes from an Empty Church. The other is called Upheaval, and they're both streaming right now. We will get to that and more coming up on the Medved Show.
Can I just say that you do more for radio than what high definition will ever do for television?
This is the Michael Medved Show.
Medved Show. I hope that your weekend is glorious, that there are reasons to celebrate with the Mariners' return to action, together with Jared Kelenic coming back for another run at great stardom, and that everything works out beautifully and in the right direction for the Republic and for appreciation of this great nation. Having spoken of which, one of the things that we need to do to appreciate the great United States of America is to put things in context, in perspective. Not everything that is negative in America or a crisis is the Civil War. And no, not every American politician, as much as he might want to be, not every American politician is Abraham Lincoln. Despite the statement by a Texas Democrat, part of those runaway Miller Lite crowd of Democratic refugees from Austin, Richard Raymond is a member of the state legislature, and listen to the way he characterizes his own role. He's on Fox News with Neil Cavuto.
But you can't just leave when it doesn't suit your interests, right? I mean, aren't you then going to be in question by a lot of people who might like what you stand for, but they don't know if you'll stand by in Texas to deal directly with the issues that matter to them?
Neil, if you can imagine, if you would just engage me here for a minute. If you could imagine that you were actually an elected official in the legislature and you knew, for example, there was legislation that would allow abuse of children. In your view, the way they were laying it out, it would allow children to be abused, and you knew the votes were there to pass. If you're telling me you would stand there and take it when you know you could stop it, well, that's the difference between you and me, and that's why I signed up, that's why I ran, that's why I got elected, because I will stand up when it's something that goes too far, Neil. I will do it just like Abraham Lincoln did.
All right, well, I knew Abraham Lincoln. I studied Abraham Lincoln. I'm not quite sure representative of Abraham Lincoln, but...
Somehow the election reform is child abuse? Really? Does this make a great deal of sense to you? Haven't we gone a little bit too far in crying wolf on this? Which is one of the reasons I was actually glad that there wasn't so much news to be made in the confrontation that the president has compared to an assault on democracy like the Civil War. There have been assaults on democracy and assaults on human decency, life and death issues. There's a new documentary that is remarkable that deals with some of those issues. We will get to that with this latest from Hollywood. For people who don't know the history of the Middle East, really the history of our time, it's worth taking a look at a remarkable film. I mean, it's really an amazing film called Upheaval, The Journey of Menachem Begin. And the reason it's so amazing is because Menachem Begin is just fascinating to watch. Now, I met him once, and he was, I think by common consensus, the greatest or one of the two greatest prime ministers of Israel in its history. And this film uses a lot of very well-known people, starting with Senator Joe Lieberman. There is the former ambassador to the United States, Michael Oren, who plays a role here. There's Michael Dermer, Ron Dermer, who is also a former recent ambassador to the United States, Carolyn Glick, who is a leading Israeli commentator. They're all talking heads, talking about the meaning of Begin. But some of the most touching footage is the footage of ordinary Israelis who remembered him, as a guy who told the truth even when it was difficult to do so, who was genuinely a war hero, a survivor of the Holocaust, and a Nobel Prize-winning peacemaker. The movie is called Upheaval, The Journey of Menachem Begin. Listen.
Menachem Begin believed in the need for the Jews to seize their future.
Begin was very much a survivor.
He was described as being anti-democratic, but he proved to be the most democratic of all.
He had faith in his convictions and a very clear view of the way that things are supposed to go.
Rise, struggle, and guarantee the prospect of living in peace for your children and their children.
And the scenes with Anwar Sadat making peace, actually, the territory that Menachem Begin negotiated back to Egypt was five times larger than the original territory of Israel. And it's a remarkable achievement. And again, what you see in some grainy black and white footage is somebody who led the Jewish underground in the fight for independence. And it tells you, among other things, a great deal about the history of Israel. His lifelong marriage with Aliza, his wife, he married when she was 17. They both barely survived the Holocaust. His whole family was killed. I believe that anybody, no matter how much or how little you know about Israel or you know about the history of the 20th century, will be enriched by seeing this film. Because part of what it talks about is the United States and our role in the fight for life in the broadest sense and for civilization and for decency. 4 stars for Upheaval, The Journey of Menachem Begin. And it's streaming now at upheavalfilm.com. And it's very easy to get and very much worth your time. 4 stars for Upheaval. The other film is another little film that's not getting a big advertising or promotion campaign, but a film that is exceptional. And it's a film about two Catholic priests and one sort of free-spirited buddy who was a buddy with one of the priests before the priest became a member of the clergy. And played by Kevin Corrigan, Thomas J. Ryan, and Max Casella. And they're trying to keep a little parish church open in New York City during the ravages of the pandemic, when the pandemic was at its worst, when New York was totally shut down. And they ended up encountering, and these encounters are very intelligently and lovingly portrayed, encountering all kinds of oddballs, lost souls, and others who came into this church for guidance. Listen.
We need as much connection as we could get right now.
If that's the case, why not open up the church?
No, it's too dangerous.
So you're afraid?
Aren't you afraid?
It would give
afraid?
People hope.
I think you're right, but it has to be conditional.
Of course.
We have to practice absolute safety. People can come in to pray by appointment only. They have 10 minutes.
Well, some people might need more than that.
Who prays for more than 10 minutes? Even the Pope doesn't pray that long. You think God wants to listen to that?
Actually, God has quite a bit to listen to here. I mean, look, some of the characters are oddballs. There is one intimate scene with partial nudity. It would be rated R if it were officially rated. This is a work of a very prominent, well-respected independent filmmaker who's Turkish-American, who almost nobody has heard of. His name is Onar Tukul, and his writing, because he wrote the screenplay, and the film itself are exceptionally thought-provoking. And one of the backgrounds of one of the priests, the one played by Kevin Corrigan, he actually plays a guy who is a Jewish guy, got estranged from his father, and became Catholic, and clearly is struggling to find God. There is a scene, actually more than one. There are a couple of scenes of what you could only call magic realism, where there are some things that happened that are supernatural and extremely well directed. Look, the film is slow, but it doesn't feel slow because the characters are so deep and so sympathetic. Does it have a real plot? It has a series of plots. It is 3 stars, B, for an understated and deeply thought-provoking film, more thought-provoking than even moving. Coming up on Monday, we will get back to the political struggles, the future of infrastructure, of critical race theory, and the battle for control of our educational system, and much more, all coming up in This Greatest Nation on God's Green Earth.
What are you going to do?